Welcome back to Martins and More. My name's Mari Rutsch.
And I'm Spoon Phillips.
And this episode's brought to you by our Patreon members. Join our growing community and enjoy early access to every episode, backstage content, exclusive videos, and more. We appreciate you. Spoon, I have two things I want to talk about today. Can you guess either one of them?
One of them is going to be about guitars, and the other is going to be about guitarists.
Exactly, and I think we should probably slide into a more serious, somber tone just for a moment or two and begin the program remembering our hero, David Lindley. Spoon, can you believe it's been a year?
Yeah, I know. March 3rd, it was a year. It was a year full of, I think, as we get older and our music heroes get even older, the ones that we grew up listening to, you expect this sort of thing, but it was still difficult. And I spent an enormous amount of this past year listening to a lot of his music, way more than I, of course, had done, you know, and maybe in recent years, going back through the Jackson Browne stuff, doing a sideman years with Jackson Browne, with Crosby and Nash, and then his solo stuff with El Rayo X, and his later collaborations with Jackson Browne when they started touring and doing their acoustic shows, similar to when they were in their early 20s and Jackson Browne's career was just taking off. But I still haven't taken down his photo off of my my photo on Facebook is actually the album cover of Win This Record with Mr. Dave's head, you know, sticking down and wryly smiling up at the camera. And and I highly recommend for anybody who would like to go out onto YouTube and look up the performance of the song called Brother John, which is actually written by one of the Nevilles. But Mr. Dave started doing it shortly after the assassination of John Lennon in 1980 and was a big part of his touring sets with El Rayo X, and has some just wonderfully blistering slide guitar that he does on his lap steel. And then he goes into a couple traditional tunes, instrumentals in the break, including Saving Grace, and then comes back out into the raucous Zydeco ending. So some really wonderful David Lindley and El Rayo X videos out there on YouTube. So check them out. Celebrate the music. That's what I say.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that song from the album, but I haven't seen the live version you're talking about. And I've actually dove deeper into his catalog on the acoustic side more than the electric side. I know I've listened to a lot of the early El Rayo X, and then there were a couple of neat versions of Werewolves of London I caught on some late night talk show repeats and those sort of things. But I don't know if it's me being lazy or I just didn't find the right search terms. I haven't been able to find some of my favorite album cuts on live performances as much as I want to, and today's a good excuse to remind me to go and look for it again. But yes, if you like Mr. Dave and you have a YouTube access, you owe it to yourself to at least spend a little bit of time. But I still, as much as it was such a shock when it happened, I normally you hear people talking about the year anniversary of someone's death, and I really genuinely can't believe it has been 12 months. It doesn't feel like it's been half that much time, and all the artists that he touched. I mean, I'm sure if you wanted to, you can go and find a lot of the commentary from people that worked with him and what they thought of his passing. And somebody did say there was a brief mention of him, at least at the Grammys. I don't know if it was anything longer than just a name on a page.
They're probably mentioning people who passed over the past year. A friend of mine eulogized him recently by, I mentioned this to you earlier, about saying that he never touched a song that he didn't make better. And I think that's a very true statement about someone who was a sideman, session man for so many people, but so unique, so colorful as a character, and this true eccentric, true American artist who sucked up music from all over the world, played stringed instruments from all over the world, was very into doing reggae and Zydeco kind of stuff and traditional rock and roll stuff, country stuff, you know, played with Dolly Parton and all those people. But it's funny you should say Werewolves of London. Exactly, Mr. Dave kind of thing is that he gets one chance to do like one song on national television, and he does Werewolves of London in a relatively sort of pedestrian rock and version of that song that doesn't feature any of his musical genius in terms of instruments and stuff. Not nearly as much as a lot of other things he could have done and other covers he could have done. But he obviously liked the song. He was very good friends with Warren Zevon. But yes, I think for people who only know him from Running on Empty and or know him from the Rod Stewart records or know him from his few television appearances with El Rey OX, you're really just barely putting your toe in the water. And you should really check out his guitar work and slide lap steel work on the El Rey OX shows from the 1980s that are out there. But yeah, between him and David Crosby, it was a really tough year for Maury and I. But we're all the richer for them having lived and put out the music they did. So thanks, Mr. Dave.
Just for a quick minute, can you even stop to imagine what it must have been like in a rehearsal room with Lindley and Crosby, or with Lindley and Zevon? Like what that afternoon must have felt like and been like?
Yeah, to have been a fly on the wall. Well, it was one of my early, going way back into my teen years, I used to imagine if I won the big lottery, I would produce a record and hopefully a tour of David Lindley and David Crosby, just acoustic, you know, like and acoustic guitars. Absolutely love his acoustic guitar work on the For Every Man album, you know, on the leads and the fills and all that stuff. Or maybe not, maybe one side would be acoustic, the other side would be electric, so they could rock out like they did on the live Crosby and Nash album and stuff like that. But yes, indeed.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Two monumentous men in my musical past.
Well, now that you made me sad, I want to talk about something else. Why don't you cheer me up? If I tell you a brief story about this really cool lunch I had one time with Spoon Phillips and Dick Boak, we ate at a place called the Cherry Hill Hotel. What does that have anything to do with the subject today we're going to talk about?
It has lots to do with it. I'm glad you brought up Dick and that sort of coincidence that he was building the kind of guitars he was building at the time that we then went over to his house and checked out, and that we were at the Cherry Hill Hotel, which has not been a hotel since maybe in our lifetime. I don't know if it was ever a hotel. It's been a restaurant on and off, and it's a very nice restaurant. It happens to be just down the street, around the corner from the Martin Guitar Factory. But the topic that you're talking about is something that has quietly been around for a little while, since the end of 2023 at the Martin Factory, but they purposely didn't make any fanfare of it. And I finally got permission from some of the muckety-mucks in the higher reaches of Martin Guitar to talk about it on the internet. So I did that, and I finally have put up a blog post about some really interesting guitars that Martin made and has for sale but has never advertised.
It's not that I want to get famous and I don't want to get rich, but I want to become muckety-muck in someone's eyes. That's my goal.
Well, I've seen your niece and your nephew and your nephews, you know, playing with Uncle Maury, so I would say you've already made the big time.
I am somebody's muckety-muck. That's true. But yeah, these guitars are really interesting. I'll tell you the truth. Somebody asked me about them back in December, and they explained to me that they heard about this series. And my first reaction was, what?
Tell you right there, they're very big on this. This is not a series. They want to make sure this is not a series. That's part of the mystique of these guitars. They're not meant to be to imply that they're being put in the same on the same shelves with other Martin guitars, or that they are meant to be around as long, or they're going to have the longevity and all that. But why don't you? What are they called? That's what you were hinting at the very beginning of this.
Well, what I was going to say, but I said the wrong things. The Cherry Hill Customs, there is a Cherry Hill 000 and a Cherry Hill Dreadnought, and they're basically both hanging in the guitar picking parlor at Martin Guitar, right through the exit through the gift shop type thing. When you're in the 1833 shop and you go past the counter, past the big display of strings, they usually have a dozen or so guitars in there. They are front and center when you walk through that door, and they are a unique pair of instruments, not series. I don't know who put that idea in my mind, but they, you can get it in a Dreadnought or a Triple O. They are made of cherry, and the interesting thing about these two instruments, you must be there in person to purchase them. And I was starting to say, somebody asked me long distance if I could go to the factory and buy one of them for him. And I said to him, first of all, I've never heard of these guitars. Are you sure you're right? And I like to be, you know, Mr. Dealer at the time and assume that I know more than everybody. And of course, that's not true. And he described that he found out there's a Cherry Hill Triple O and a Cherry Hill D that you can only buy when you're at Martin. So I thought, that doesn't sound right. And of course, I researched it immediately, found out it's true. And I'll let Spoon get into the nuts and bolts of the reasoning and the discipline of it. But if you go to the factory and visit the take the tour, you know, visit the museum, once you are there, you are allowed to make a purchase of these guitars. And if a dealer does want to purchase one, they have to be in person. And I'm not sure, honestly, I should probably research more of this before I say something on a microphone about it. Maybe Spoon, having talked to Scott, can clear it up. I'm not even sure if a dealer can go to the factory later today, purchase one, and resell it. I think the spirit of it is to reward those folks that make the pilgrimage. They have a guitar that can only be purchased there. But I'll tell you, I'm so excited about this concept and about these two instruments, and I'll admit it right to Spoon. We kind of race this idea into an episode as we learn about it, and Spoon is a little bit further along than me. I'm actually going to listen to what Spoon says on this podcast, just like you are, and I'll learn at the same time you do, because this is a brand new idea for me. The only leg up I have on Spoon, I got to play these guitars yesterday. But Spoon, what do you know about the ins and outs, and am I right to say what I'm thinking?
Yes and no. So the Cherry Hill guitars, yes, at the end of 2023, they quietly put them in the picking parlor with a little plaque kind of explaining what they are. And the history of this goes back to certain people inside of Martin wanting to enhance the visitor experience, wanting to add something special, but not, I guess let's put it this way, the original Mr. Martin, or maybe his son or grandson, came up with a slogan for Martin guitars that were ornate but never ostentatious. And they really kind of embraced that feeling with these guitars. In the words of Scott Sasser, who was the primary designer for these instruments, these can be described as a custom D18 and a custom 0018 with cherry back and sides and some woody upgrades. And that's my term for it, woody upgrades. You remember woody upgrades? He used to play for the Pirates. but they decided they were not going to release them as official models. These were meant to be a surprise for people coming to the factory. And so much of a surprise that they put them in the picking parlor. They like to say they're on display in the lobby, but they're not on display in the lobby. The picking parlor, you would think it was like a maintenance room or a private lunchroom for the people who work at the gift shop, because it's at the end back behind the counter of the gift shop. And you go, you know, it's not behind the counter, but you have to walk past the end of the counter where they enter the counter to go in, and where you can play all these different Martins from different series and stuff that are hanging on the wall. And then on their own wall, they have these two instruments. And a lot of people may remember various Cherry Martins and like them to various extents. There were the Smartwood models that were early forays into sustainable woods and environmentally friendly materials and that sort of thing. And there have been some other Cherry guitars here and there. The OM Cherry, which I think is, until these came out, was the best sounding Cherry guitar that I'd ever heard. And you know, they're the so Martin's been playing around with Cherrywood for a long time. Scott really loves Cherry. He feels he's always felt it was underutilized and underappreciated, both in terms of its aesthetic, you know, physical beauty, and in terms of its tonal properties. And so that was the initial idea. The concept of Cherry Hill guitars, it's nice that these are made out of cherry, but it's not just about the cherry. Cherry Hill refers to the first home of C.F. Martin Sr. in Pennsylvania. And so that's where they got the concept of it. And it's a location, at least romantically, that looms very large in the imagination of the Martin family, the Martin employees, and the legacy of the Martin company, and you know, nerds like me that are very into Martin lore and Martin history. But we'll get into that in a little bit later. But it is going to be a series of guitars, It's not a series of guitars. It's a concept that is in line with some of their modern thinking and their modern goals at C.F. Martin, which include the Inception series, which is a series. The Inception, there's now the new GPC Inception model that is made with American maple back and sides. The Cherry Hill models that are out currently are made with cherry back and sides. What they have in common is these are domestic American woods. These are domestic American hardwoods that have traditionally been used for musical instruments for, you know, basically since the founding of our country and the early instrument makers. And some people may not know that C.F. Martin and Company is the oldest string instrument maker in America, one of the oldest companies still existing, family-owned businesses. I think it is the oldest family-owned business in the United States under a certain threshold of employees. I don't remember what that is. It's either like with over 500 employees or under 1,000 employees or something like that. They've got 10 years on Levi Strauss. There is one musical instrument manufacturer, which is, I can never pronounce it correctly, the symbol name begins with Z. What's that?
Trivia question.
Yeah.
Make it a trivia question.
Okay, here's the trivia question that I just gave away by saying it's a symbol maker. Beginning with Z is the oldest, technically the oldest musical instrument manufacturer. But they were already a big company before they came over to Boston, so... So that's a quasi-trivia question. But anyway, let's talk about, now that we know what these are, essentially they are a custom, as if you've gone to the custom shop and you ordered a D18, but you wanted it with cherry back and side, and then you also wanted the upgrades of flamed maple, flamed European maple bindings and M piece on the body and wood fiber inlay. So on the top, so that the old style 18 rosette and the other purfling and I guess the little rosewood line that's in the back, on the back of the backstrip and all that stuff is all wood fiber. And you ordered that in a dreadnought or a triple O, that's what this guitar is. So in other words, it's standard series build. So it is a full dovetail neck joint. It's the solid hardwood neck with the high-performance neck, ebony bridge and fingerboard. The ebony is undyed on the bridges, so they look really cool. So you see all the pattern and the natural patterns in the ebony. Undyed cherry. There's no toner on the cherry, but otherwise you get the same toner on the top. And the other Martin standard series, it's North American spruce. So depending on availability, it might be Sitka, it might be Lutz, which is very, very similar, closely related. So tell me about your experience coming in and playing those guitars.
Well, I actually got to play one a couple weeks ago. I've been trying to make it a point to get to Martin once or twice a month to do some recordings where you guys might have caught on. In addition to the 20 questions game we're going to play before this episode's over, I've been cornering Martin employees and asking them to play a fast-paced half round of it called 10 questions. So I've been trying to get to the lobby on certain days to find some of our friends. And two times ago, I actually went into the pick and parlor and I forgot those guitars might be there. At the time, the triple O wasn't hanging up, but the D was. And I No, the other way around. I got to play the triple O, but I didn't see the D. And I thought, oh, this is a, I don't want to say series again, this is a collection of instruments that I let myself forget about. Not only are we in transition from being a music store and becoming a podcast, so we're not ordering new inventory the way we normally would be, I would typically be looking at every single thing that's new 3 or 4 times a week just to, you know, stay ahead of things. It actually caught me off guard, and I got to spend some time with it. I put a little quick video on Instagram. I really didn't listen to it and really evaluate my own playing of it that day with any thought of talking about this guitar a lot later. So I kind of just picked it up and played it, and then I put it down and played 2 other guitars and drove home. But now that I had the opportunity to see them both again, I really do think they have a lot in common. They're obviously, you know, standard series relatives, but I would go so far as to say it reminds me more of an 18 build than an OME Cherry, or doesn't feel as relatable to the old SWs, the Smartwoods from years past. This feels more like a Mahogany instrument than a Cherry instrument, at least in my lap first impressions. I'd like, of course, like to see them again, play them more than just 1 or 2 times in a quick video, but I don't necessarily think these are glorified past Cherry guitars with wooden inlay. They feel different to me for some reason.
Well, there's for many reasons for that. They had none of them, previous Cherry guitars, had standard series build. So, and now that they've come out with standard series guitars that have a satin finish, and you play that, you can play them side by side with the full gloss nitrocellulose finish, you can hear what that high gloss cellulose finish does, and it definitely changes the sound of an instrument. And also, I mean, you can, for people who play a lot of different kind of acoustic guitars out there, people are familiar with Loudons. Those are satin finish guitars. That part of the reason they sound the way they do is because they have a satin finish instead of that sort of hard candy apple nitrocellulose finish that really grips that body and makes it much more reflective. And so you get a more open, expansive sound from the satin finish standard series D18, satin finish D28, than you get from the gloss finish ones that give you a, I don't know if I can call it focused, but it definitely changes how it resonates and how the sound comes out and projects forward out of the instrument. So this gets the benefit of the full gloss finish and the full-size dovetail neck joint. As far as I know, there's been no other Cherry guitars that have ever been produced by Martin as a model that have those two features in concert. And also, it's got the full D18 forward-shifted scallop bracing. It's got the same bracing as the 0018 on the inside of the 0000. And so I think the Smartwood ones, I think they had mortise and tenon neck joints, and they would have had the hybrid bracing, and they may even had even a simpler bracing of the 15 series. I don't remember, actually. I'm pretty sure they had the hybrid bracing that you would have had on the old 16s, but they were satin finish instruments. They were not, this is the first time we are seeing what is a full standard series guitar with the upgrades of the wood binding and the wood fiber that you get on the authentic series, with Cherry back and sides. And it is part of Martin's continuing efforts to promote domestic tonewoods that are plentiful, tonewoods that are renewable. And even the European flame maple, it comes from renewable sources in Europe, and as does, I mean, everything on the guitar. I don't think there's any like Forest Stewardship Council certifications on this stuff, but that's kind of the point of the ebony is coming from sustainable forest and all that stuff as far as I know, but they picked Cherry because Scott likes Cherry. They picked Cherry because back when he was the manager of the custom shop, he was involved in making a high-end Cherry guitar for a close friend, and he really liked how it came out, and his friend loved how it came out, and as well as some other custom guitars. And he kept them in the back of his mind, thinking of doing something like this someday. Well, then other people at Martin came to him and said, we would like to come up with product, which is what, of course, businesses call beautiful things like acoustic guitars. We would like to come up with product that will only be for sale at the factory, and that will be under the radar. It'll be there basically to enhance the lobby and visitor center experience, and at least for some people, provide them an opportunity to buy a guitar they can't get anywhere else that has a certain amount of rarity baked into the instrument. And they left it with him, and this is what he came up with. And yes, there will be other, they have every intention of having other Cherry Hill Customs coming out in the future. They're basically going to just go with it. They have no set number. I think they're going to wait and see how it plays out. They will probably see how well these guitars do and see if, you know, in terms of how long they keep them available. We don't know whether other guitars will come out while these will remain available. Like in the old CEO days, the CEO models that Chris Martin designed, they were limited editions. The CEO 7 was so popular, they kept it. And they kept the CEO 8 for longer than normal, too, and maybe even the CEO 6. But the CEO 7, you know, just never went away, and they kind of broke their own rule of them, you know. Usually the CEO 7 would have been gone before the CEO 8 CEO came out. So we don't know. This is all new. Like I said, they didn't even want, you know, there was some, you know, back behind the wall stuff of not wanting this to show up in the press. They didn't have any kind of release or launch about this. It wasn't, you know, these are not meant to be part of or compete with the Martins that are available in the global market. These are meant to specifically be different enough from them that they're their own thing. And it's a new concept. It's and that we will wait. Have to wait and see, you know, where it goes and how it's received.
Well, I have two questions after you said all that. Are we allowed to talk about these? The more you say it, it sounds like it's almost supposed to be an inside secret.
Yeah, I got permission to talk about this, and you asked me early on about something else. So I'll just say, I can't comment on what kind of discussions may have gone on among the people at Martin about this. But ultimately, yes, dealers may buy these guitars. But they have to be at the factory, and they're only allowed to buy one of each, ever. And so no phone-in orders, no replenishments of any kind. And I don't know, maybe not ever. Maybe every time they come back, they can actually buy one, but I don't think so. I think they're limited to one instrument of the Dreadnought, one instrument of the 000. If they come to see, they're at the factory, and they're not telling them, I mean, maybe they are now that I put out this blog post, but they weren't advertising this to anybody. So if a dealer walked in the picking parlor and saw them and said, can I buy one of these? Ultimately, the answer became, yes, you can buy one and to resell to your, you know, for yourself or to resell to customers. And in fact, to tell you about how successful they feel these guitars are, Scott Sasser doesn't own many guitars. He came from the drum and percussion world and worked his way up in a company that sells drums and percussion and was based in Nashville. And eventually he came to Martin Guitar. So he doesn't own a lot of guitars. He bought the 000 because he liked it so much. Wow. And so that's his personal guitar. He bought the Cherry Hill 000. And I wouldn't mind having one myself, actually. I did get to play them extremely briefly when I was there. At the end of my day of shooting the NAMM videos, I went in there to plug in the SC18 and see how it sounded through an amp. And unfortunately, I was recognized and there was a group of people in there, this old guy and his nephews, and it's the old guy's first trip to the factory and all this stuff, and they're having a day of it. And so one of his nephews recognized me, and so they ended up being all about me when I really just wanted to play the CS. And so I only got to play them very briefly, and I'd already torn down all of my equipment, so I couldn't shoot videos. And I'm not sure at that time if they would have let me or not, but I got to say, you know, excuse me, I really like to play these. So I played them for, you know, both of them, and the old man played the Dread, and he played Deep River Blues or something like that. And I, no, it wasn't. It was Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. And, cool. And I kind of like played lead along with the triple O, and that was that, I think. But I think those were the guitars we played at the time. I know I did. We did a little trading around. But like you said, I kind of forgot about them because I got so busy when I came home that I still haven't completed all of my reviews and videos for the NAMM models because of personal stuff. So I remembered them again, and so I reached out to them, and Scott wrote me back, and so I just got, you know, I just got the blessing for them to actually put the, you know, and he sent me some photos, so there's photos in the blog post and stuff. So nice. And somebody else, Martin Insider, who's sharing this podcast with me, sent me a couple photos too from yesterday. So thank you very much.
Well, like Clayton would say, less talky, more rocky. What say we take a quick pause and listen to a sound sample of the Martin Cherry Hill Custom 000?
It's a shame that that old amp back there is just for display only. I was very disappointed. I saw that when I walked in on NAMM Day, and it was like, oh, man. It was like, nope, doesn't work, can't play it.
Oh, but, it doesn't work. Aww.
No, it's not. It's just for display. But maybe it works, but I wasn't allowed to play it. Let's put it that way. But yeah, very nice. And exactly what I think you were right on the money. I'm curious to know, I didn't see a microphone, so what were you recording into when you shot that?
Oh, I just had a little lapel mic that I was using for some interviews earlier that day. I just really stick it on my knee, and it's just an omnidirectional DJI mic, so it's certainly not worthy of a real professional review, but I couldn't resist trying to use it. And if you get it close enough and it's not so noisy, it kind of does the trick. But yeah, it's funny, the 000. And I mentioned this earlier when I was first talking about it. I really, hearing it again, and you guys probably would agree, when you're playing guitar, it sounds one way. And then when you're only the audience and you're not playing, taking your hands off the instrument and just being a listener is a nice second perspective. I really do think this sounds like a 0018 with some Cherry in it. And it's interesting. You brought up the fact that there haven't been any Cherry guitars previous with a full dovetail neck joint. And, of course, the full complement of scallop bracing, like a 0018 with quarter-inch scallop bracing. I really think the fact that this is called Cherry almost might be, I don't want to say a slight, but if anybody hears the title of this instrument and tells himself before getting acquainted with it, I'm not sure I'm a fan of Cherry, kind of trick yourself into thinking about these are 18s with Cherry on them. And I know that might sound like I'm saying the same thing twice, but I really do categorize these more as standard series level, you know, tone, and not to slight the other guitars, but I like the OME Cherry. You and I both spoke really high of on previous episodes. I think this 000 Cherry really smokes that.
Well, that's interesting you say that. there are definitely differences between the guitars. Pretty sure the OME Cherry is European spruce, which they sometimes put on guitars to kind of help warm up the voice, which they did on the GPC exception, Inception. But otherwise, yes, that's been my favorite Cherry guitar until these guitars came out. I would love to play them more. And like you said, it's slight because I think some people have a prejudice about anything that's not mahogany, not rosewood. I mean, they even have a prejudice about Koa because it's not, it's not mahogany, it's not rosewood. And I mean, if you think of all of the amazing jazz guitars made out of maple, and the classical guitars made out of various woods that are not rosewood or mahogany. You know, that's very much a matter of personal taste, but also a matter of being told what's wonderful and understanding why it's wonderful, and things that are different can, I don't like it because it's different, you know, and then you get used to it. But I'm good for them. You know, good for them. I remember they did basically a D18 in Sycamore, and I enjoyed that guitar too. A very, very different sounding than the mahogany one, but it was still a very successful guitar. And I will not be the least bit surprised if we see Sycamore Cherry Hill models in the future. And the reason I say that about Sycamore goes back to the Martin history that's involved with the naming of this concept of custom instruments. And coming up into Martin lore and learning Martin history and the history of C.F. Martin and him coming over from Saxony in the German Republic and setting up shop with his young family in 1833 New York City, just a short distance in those days from the big tall ships on the wharfs and in the western part of Manhattan, and very quickly becoming popular and very quickly establishing a reputation for making excellent musical instruments, and his wife being unhappy and wanting to move to not liking that city, and one of their relatives, who may be a cousin or brother-in-law or something, writing to them about how wonderful it is in Pennsylvania. And how in Pennsylvania you had more German speakers than you had not German speakers, and a very thriving German population with German traditions. And so they probably went, I don't remember now if they went for a visit or she just went for a visit or whatever. And so they up and moved, and they left New York City. They retained their dealership in New York City, the company that was actually selling the guitars, and they moved to, they wanted to move to Nazareth, Pennsylvania, and they weren't allowed to move to Nazareth, Pennsylvania because they weren't members of the Moravian Church, and in those days it was a closed religious community, which is another fascinating history. You should look up the history of the Moravians going back to the Hundred Years' War and why they came to the New World and all that. But three of their major tenets is humility, hard work, and music. And so music is deeply ingrained in the Moravian lifestyle and history. And so they were forced to live someplace else. So they had to move out in the country to a place called Cherry Hill. And so that's where the name comes from. Cherry Hill is where his first home and workshop was. And they were at Cherry Hill for just under 5 years. And eventually his wife converted to Moravian. And maybe it's, you know, it's imagined that it's because of the music they had in the services and stuff. And then they were allowed to move from Cherry Hill to Nazareth. And I spent decades imagining out there somewhere in the wilds of Pennsylvania in the 1830s was some little hamlet or village called Cherry Hill. When you look it up, Cherry Hill, Pennsylvania is all the way over by Ohio, up by Erie. So it's unrelated entirely to the Cherry Hill in the Martin history. And so one day, since COVID, I think, I came out of the Martin factory and I'm standing there and it was like a dewy, you know, freshly rained, beautiful Pennsylvania day. And I said, you know, where is Cherry Hill anyway? And the person next to me pointed right next to the factory and said, right there. Yeah, they said, right there. And it's like, what? So, yeah, I thought he was joking. And it's like, yeah. And when you're at the Martin factory, that where you come into where the parking lot is, right across the street, not Sycamore Street, that's where the parking lot is, but I can't remember, you might remember, what is that street that goes up to the restaurant in the T-junction?
Oh, I just was there yesterday. I don't remember.
Okay. Well, that little slope that leads up, that little gentle slope, is Cherry Hill. And I was picturing it being way out in the country. But, and I imagine in 1833 it was out in the country, but technically it's on the next hill over from Nazareth. And in those days it would have been farmland or soggy bottomland at the time, and you have to travel by horse or wagon. You know, it would be a trip to have to go from Cherry Hill to Nazareth. Mm. But now it's part, even the factory isn't technically in Nazareth. Technically, it's in the township of Upper Nazareth. But with some, not necessarily irony, it's interesting to me that the new Martin factory is right around the corner from where he lived. And in fact, Chris Martin tried to buy the house that is on the lot that would have belonged to the Martin factory and later, you know, after CF Sr. is long gone. But the owners refused to do that. So Cherry Hill is just around the corner. Up the hill is the Cherry Hill Hotel. And one of those three houses, I never remember which one, basically across from the Cherry Hill restaurant, is where CF Martin had his first home and workshop. And so, yeah. And the other reason it's cherry is that all of the cherry used on these guitars is grown and harvested in Pennsylvania. So it is homegrown cherry. Pennsylvania cherry on the guitars that are only available at CF Martin.
Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, and I don't want you to tell me what you're not allowed to say as far as some inside information, but a minute ago you used the word irony, and you said you wouldn't be surprised to see a Sycamore back and sides guitar on a Cherry Hill Custom in the future. I'm not trying to be silly. Am I wrong to think all these guitars need to be cherry?
No, I don't think they do need to be cherry. Cherry Hill Customs is named for Cherry Hill. That's basically the location. The Martin Guitar Factory, it sets at the base, at the bottom of Cherry Hill. And so so it's named after that. So they're going with cherry because it's kind of like when they came out with the SC models, I'm certain they went with SC-13 for the very first SC-13 because it's a 13-fret guitar. And they liked the poetic aspect of that. So they decided to make the first Cherry Hill Customs out of cherry. The reason somebody's probably already picked up on, why might they make, other than the fact that Sycamore is a plentiful American hardwood, why might they make Cherry Hill instruments out of Sycamore? Because the Martin Guitar Factory is on Sycamore Street, and they like those kind of symmetries. So
even I followed that.
So yes, okay. But so yes, it is. I wish I could play them more. I'm looking forward to someday getting a chance to play them, and maybe actually getting a good video and putting them online. And hopefully, you can get over there with your real gear and do that too. I would just reach out to Scott and say, "Is it okay if I do this?" Because I'm not sure how much fanfare they want about these. You know, I have no idea how many they've sold, but I do feel like there's nothing when you walk in saying, "Hey, check out these guitars back in the picking parlor," you know? So it's very under the radar and very, very humble, modest way of going about this. And I think it's very Martin in the traditional Martin sense for them to do something like this. So it's very non-traditional for them to sell guitars direct at the factory. We know that you've always been to walk in the picking parlor and say, "I like that," but and they'd say, "Well, who's your dealer?" And you'd buy it through your dealer, and you know, and I could say, "This guy right here next to me," and you know, and you could order that, you know, and that you've done that. I'm sure you've sold guitars to people who played a guitar at the Martin factory and wanted to buy it, but but this time it doesn't work that way. This time it is for people that just walk in and say, "Can I buy that?" And they'll say, "Sure," and they'll sell it to them. So, you know, a lot of people don't know Martin used to have they might still have an artist. I don't remember, but, you know, compliment. I don't remember what they call it. But it's somebody like Eric Clapton doesn't have to go through a dealer. Let's put it that way. So they, you know, they have sold direct guitars to people who are, you know, professional performing artists. But it's a pretty limited number of people, a fairly quiet thing, and I don't know if they still do that or not, but this is the first time that you know, our friend Reese, who likes Tripolos, could walk in there, play that guitar, and say, I want one. They'll say, "Okay, we'll make you one," and maybe they sell you the one on there. I don't know how that works, but
and he's a drummer.
And he's a drummer, so Scott would be very happy if another drummer came in there and really liked that guitar and bought one.
Spoon, would you mind if I play another video from our recording session of the Cherry Hill D?
Not in the least. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's pause for a moment and listen to another sound sample.
Well, that little mic certainly does a good job of showing the balance and showing how the low E string definitely can come out on, you know, when you're finger picking the triple O and when you're strumming and strumming the dreadnought. So, yeah, so we want to see more Cherry Hill guitars. I think I should probably add a disclaimer here. It's entirely possible they won't call the other guitars Cherry Hill. Maybe Cherry Hill is just these Cherry models and they'll come up with other names. I don't think they know right now about that. What I do know is that the word that they have settled on, or the terms they settled on, is factory special. So these are the first factory specials. And that goes back to the 1930s, where people could order special orders that would have an S in the stamp, so people knew they were not a regular model. But I'm curious. I totally forgot to look in the sound hole to see if these just said custom or what they say. They probably just say custom.
And, I forgot to too.
Yeah, but nowadays with their laser printer and stuff, they can very quickly whip up whatever they want to call anything, and so maybe they have something unique in there. But I totally forgot to ask, and I'll ask Scott. I may even add it to the blog post at OneMans. That's OneMans.com, OneMans with a Z, and at OneMans Guitar, which is the subsite of OneMans.com. So it's in the blog. It's amongst the other stuff about the new Martins, and so check it out if you want to learn more about these, and book your flights if you want to buy one. Because you have to go to the factory if you can't drive. And I don't even think, I'll be very curious about this. If let's say our friend Reese walked in there and said, I want to buy this from my friend Jim in New Jersey, will they let him do that? I don't know if they will. That's a very interesting idea. So,
Spoon, I don't want to seem like I'm upset, and I don't want to be a drama queen, but what do you think is going to happen sooner? We're going to play 20 questions, or you're going to recognize I wore a cherry shirt for this episode?
I was wondering about that. I saw you in that. I was like, did he have a dentist appointment? Why is Maury wearing a shirt with buttons?
Jerk.
But very good, very good. I didn't even think about doing anything remotely like that. I could have been sitting here, I don't know, with a jar of maraschino cherries behind me or something if I had one. But I guess it's 20 questions, because I did not, in fact, notice you were wearing a cherry shirt especially for this.
Last time I dress up, 20 questions.
And so I have a Martin guitar in my mind that is available for sale out there somewhere. And Maury, the smart guy, has 20 questions to guess what model the wise guy, being me, is thinking of. He's allowed up to 3 guesses of a model, and they have to count toward those 20 questions. So we now have 20 questions on the clock. Go.
Is this guitar built in Nazareth?
Yes, that's one question.
Is this guitar in a series?
Yes, that's 2 questions.
Can you blame me?
Try.
Does this guitar have pearl anywhere on the top in form of binding?
No, that's three questions.
Yep. Does this guitar have rosewood back and sides?
No, that's four questions.
Is it a limited edition / special edition?
No. Five questions.
Does it have mahogany back and sides?
Yes. Six questions.
Does it have an Adirondack spruce top?
No. Seven questions.
Does it have electronics?
It can. So that's a maybe.
Well, if I lose by 19 and a half, you're in trouble. Is it a Dreadnought?
No.
Is it an OM?
No. So you're up to 10 questions.
Is it a triple O?
Yes.
Is it a triple O 18?
Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
12 questions. I thought that would be, close to the mark, close enough to the mark that you weren't going to think about it after talking about the triple O all day long.
Exactly what happened. When I knew it wasn't a triple O cherry, I went way away from anything like that.
So, and I was hoping that you were going to dance around it enough that I would make you sweat a little longer, but that was still pretty good. You nailed it in 12.
Thank you.
So, an 18 nailed in 12.
So, talk about the triple O 18 briefly before we wrap this show up.
The triple O 18 is one of Martin's longstanding popular models that dates back to the early 20th century, when it was the very first cataloged 12-fret triple O size, and it was very popular. And then when it converted to 14 frets in the 1934, it was even more popular. And for many, many years through our lifetime and going back to the late 1940s, the triple O 18 with mahogany back and side, Sitka spruce top, short scale neck, various neck shapes, the low profile coming in around 1981, I think. And it had non-scallop 5/16 inch braces and plain white dot, domino dots and black and white purfling and black binding and a black pickguard. And at that time it had become the least popular Martin, except overseas, because Martins are so expensive overseas. It sold well in Europe and Asia, but not in the American market at all. And so they decided something needed to be done about it. And so they changed the 5/16 inch non-scallop bracing to quarter inch scallop bracing. And they changed the appointments to those of what's basically pre-war style 18. So you had three dots, of each dot gets a little smaller. And I'm so sorry. Do they have the full dots on the 18, or they have the three dots? I think it's only the vintage ones that have the three dots. I'm sorry about that. But anyway, they basically got the aging toner. They got the open tuners, open back tuners, and the scallop bracing inside, and tortoiseshell binding and tortoiseshell pickguard on the outside. So they look like what's essentially a 1937 triple O 18. And they skyrocketed in popularity. I love them. They're very fun to play. They got the modified low oval profile. They got the one. The other big change was changing the nut width to 1 3/4 inch. So a very popular guitar. And the Cherry Hill model is basically that same guitar, but with cherry back and sides. So,
well, Spoon, you know what the music means. We got to wrap things up. I want to thank all of you guys for all of your support. If you do have the opportunity to get yourself to the Martin Guitar Factory, Monday through Friday. Please don't forget to check out Behind the Counter or Past the Counter in the back of the 1833 shop, the Martin Cherry Hill Customs, the 000 and the Dreadnought. Tell them Maury and Spoon sent you, and you will have a great time. From all of us at Martin's and More, thanks for listening.
Hear you later.